This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell and I are with Howard Mansfield. And the reason that I mention New Hampshire is because there is a really keen sense in reading your book, The Same Axe Twice, that we still have things to learn from our early roots in New England. Now, America has lots of roots. Some of them are in Africa. Some of them are in part of the immigrant experience that comes from many other places. But perhaps we've forgotten that New England still has a powerful impact on who we are in America. And, of course, America has a powerful impact on the rest of the world. This business about looking again at New England, where you happen to live and about which you write, what do you see in New England that is so special to the rest of it that we may have forgotten?
A couple of things. And these things, I think, are true in other places in the country as well, too. One is a sense of civic obligation a lot of people have, that they will show up, they will get it done. A sense that you can make things right, which is, you know, the good side of that kind of prissy moral reform side.
Prissy moral reform, let's see.
Which is true of New England. I think New England has a real history of scolding and scolding the country and scolding each other going back to its founding. But there's that. There's a history of ecological engagement, and there's a sense that you can turn things around. I think those things are true about New England. And there's people have some sense of history here, and I think that helps, saying, well, we don't want this place necessarily to look like every other place, so let's continue with these design practices, or let's not to build this way, or let's respect that. And I think those things happen sometimes here.
There also, I think, you know, my sense is there's a human scale here, and if you take Boston out of the equation, there are a lot of small towns not intimidating.
We have a lot of small towns yet. We have a lot of places where people still expect to be heard
and demand to be heard.
They will be. I mean, it's not even a demand. They will. They're going to tell you. And it's not even us and them anymore in these towns still. It's just, well, when you go to town meeting and it really works, you can really see the entire town making up its mind. People actually standing up and saying, I hadn't considered that. You're right. I've changed my mind. Now, how often does that happen in public life? I've seen it at town meetings. I've seen very good decisions made. Mm-hmm. I've seen so-so decisions made. But people got together and talked about it in a public way. And it's just wonderful when you see the town working together to modify something, to come away a decision everyone can own to some extent.
This is sort of the predicates of democracy, free speech, and a sort of a case study in why those things matter.
Yeah, and it does matter. And when it works, it's wonderful. And when it doesn't work, it's also studying democracy, but people not wanting to speak up and people reluctant to speak up and people who get their people to the meeting. Well, that's the way it is.
You talk about the town meeting hall, the meeting hall itself, and it's kind of rough ride over the centuries.
Oh, the meeting houses, yeah.
And there's a sense even that these physical spaces have some of those big lessons to teach us.
Yeah, meeting houses, history surprised me, because when you see them, they're these wonderful white things, churches, you could call them. Some of them are churches, some are still public and privately owned, jointly owned, and they're on the common, and they're in all the calendars, and people come up and look at them, and they have this wonderful classical architecture, and they're very composed, and old wavery glass, and you say, oh, what a settled time that was. They come from this classical past, you know, the founding fathers. And then when you read about them, these things, there were tremendous arguments in the town about where to site them. It often said that the meeting house devil was at work. Some towns had wars, so-called wars, for 100 years. They were often left unpainted for years. They were called with terrible names like, you know, the coffin, which would be a great place to spend 6 hours on Sunday, the coffin. And then they would be torn down, neglected, turned into a chicken pen, all sorts of things. Not respected. It had this whole rough and ready history to it. So you see how...
This is just a building.
Exactly. It didn't become... And most of them weren't white, most of them back then. They were painted... Town meeting would vote to paint them pea green and brown and sky blue and, you know, but then, you know, orange. But then, you know, as you know, good taste has nothing to do with democracy. I would have loved to have seen the records of these voting on the colors. I don't know how they arrived at them. See, everything didn't become white, painted white, until like the colonial revival. So it doesn't have this calm. And it wasn't calm back then, and it wasn't just handed down. It was just this really rough ride. And a lot of these towns that we admire and think are so settled were built really quickly. A lot of them moved several times in their history. And the good news about that is that we can do the same. We can make changes. We can build quickly too. We can adjust also. It's not one day they set this in stone and we can't ever approach it. You can still go back and do something contemporary that would also have good qualities.
There's a richness and a complexity and a vitality to that that we, you know, that the white epoxied variant doesn't capture. And that white epoxied version diminishes the entire experience.
You mean the sort of the faux copy?
Yeah.
The Disney faux copy, the copy, sorry.
it's a faux copy.
It's a real copy.
Faux copy would be, it's a good double. Anyway, never mind.
But the faux image.
We sort of jumped into this, and it may not be obvious to everybody, that this profound metaphysical question that is the same acts twice.
Ah, yes.
It's something I think most of us don't think about, and or if we do, we rapidly go some other place because it's non-trivial. Tell us about the same acts twice.
Yeah, the title of the book comes from this old joke, actually, about a Yankee farmer. The farmer says, I've had the same axe my whole life. I've only changed the head 3 times and the handle 4 times. And the joke is supposed to be on the farmer that he doesn't have the same axe. And actually, he does have the same axe, more so than, say, his neighbor who might have put an axe in a glass case, because he possesses the knowledge to make that tool, because a tool really lives in 2 senses. Its physical sense and also in this knowledge and care to use it. Because you go to museums, you see a lot of tools, no one even knows what they are anymore. They really cease to be tools in a lot of way. And so the important lesson for restoration, for preservation, is that we really need to focus more on the process, on the handicraft, and on the skills for doing things, and less so much on the finished product. We can do finished products well, but sometimes it's more important to go the long way around to get there, to preserve the old skills and the old ways. That's what I'm getting at in the book. It's what I look at. What it is really, you know, Heraclitus famously said, different in ever, different waters flow down. You can't step in the same river twice. And yet with historic preservation, we're trying to do just that. So when you get right into the heart of that contradiction, you sort of get at what everybody's kind of looking at in the book is, well, how do you have the same axe twice? What are the ways? How can you step in the same river twice? And one of the ways of doing that is by preserving the skills and the care and the loving attention and passing that on and not being so concerned about the axe. We have several classic examples. One is the Japanese at their great temple, Ise, have rebuilt that temple every, like, 60 years with one or two exceptions for war for 1,300 years. It's the same axe 61 times, but out of new materials, although UNESCO says it's not. And then we have the USS Constitution, which is sort of a government-sized farmer's axe, huge, the axe we've all paid for. That, there's been about 10 restorations of that. There's only 10 or 15% of the wood left. So you say, well, what's the point? Why save the ship? Well, what you're keeping alive there is the skills to build a ship like that and the attention and the pride. And there's tremendous pride when you go down there and see the riggers working there and everybody's just excited to work on this. And the Navy has tremendous pride. That ship is actually on the active roster for our nation's defense. So should all the submarines fail and that's it. They're going to push that out of the harbor. That's the last line of defense. They're going to get those cannons going.
It's interesting to me to hear you talk about these things, and I have this kind of shadow image of Michael Lewis talking about the new thing out of Silicon Valley.
Really?
And I'm thinking, how can these two things exist in the same universe?
Maybe I should have called this book the old thing.
Well, maybe. Or the new old thing, or the old new thing.
Get a free ride.
But it is curious to me that in this culture there is so much elasticity that you can have the Silicon Valleys where people are always looking for the new thing. At the same time, with the same sense of richness that you have these folks that you have dropped in on in all kinds of different ways who are working to preserve things that are very old and yet are still alive. That kind of massive inclusion seems to me only possible in a democracy.
It's hopeful. It's very hopeful when you think about it, that we can, if we could take that to some of our so-called intractable problems, which we have created, we might be able to get make a little headway with them, perhaps. But don't ask me which problem.
Well, but
that's
but
the advanced course.
But all of these
that's
problems,
the next book.
As you rightly point out, this is a throwaway age, and when we begin to learn from those things that we have thrown away, that you start a virtuous cycle rather than one that is purely into the depths of despair.
Yeah, old things sometimes offer resistance, and like and it focuses your, I think, focuses your effort. It's almost like a cold day when you have to dress up and shovel your way out. Well, that focuses your attention. I think there's something in that.
Well, and a cold day will kill you if you don't pay attention to it.
Very easily.
Yeah, there's a certain attention in that.
Thinking about the acts and thinking about the USS Constitution, it's easy to say, well, they're simply not the same. They are something different. It gets personal when we think of ourselves.
We are and are not the same person.
We are, you know, our cellular, our entire physiognomy gets replaced, you know, depending on what part you're looking at, every 7 years or every 3 years or whatever. And what is left is the sense of continuity, which arguably is the same thing you're talking about, which is essentially a spiritual entity.
Think about that while we go away for a break. We're going to be back in a moment with Howard Mansfield, who will have a chance to respond to Bill Russell's
provocation.
And I will be here to watch. I'm Paula Gordon. We'll all be back in just a moment. Please be with us.